Okay, you're all very welcome to this third EYDDB seminar, and which is called Drivers for Development, Advocacy, Diversification, Donations and Endowments. Well, in fact, what is a DDB seminar, you may wonder? Well, it is an opportunity for persons who have recently produced a dissertation in the area of international development or related to issues of interest to international development. So, in fact, this is the third seminar. We have a special series. We have published seven briefs so far, and we are extremely grateful for the four presenters today that they have volunteered to present their work and also to come here and discuss it with you. But before we start the seminar, I will just briefly tell you a little bit about EBA, in case you don't know. Well, EBA is a government committee. We're now entering our fourth year, and our mandate, our original mandate, is for 4 years, although we are hopeful that it will be extended. Our task is quite broad. We are expected to study, analyze, and evaluate Swedish international development cooperation. And we do so, actually we have two main modes of operating. One is to have external authors present proposals to us that is consequently approved or not approved by the committee, which is a 10-member committee, all in personal capacity. And my name is Eva Littman, and I'm part of that committee. And then when it's been approved, the secretariat, we have a very competent secretariat with seven persons who will then be the liaison between the committee and the authors. The second modality is that we extend invitations to evaluate or to present a study in a particular area. And that has mainly been geared towards evaluation or evaluative studies of late. So far we have produced 12 reports. We have 16 studies ongoing. We've also had, one of our tasks is of course also to create fora for interchange and for discussion with our studies, but also now with these dissertations. And we have had, 17 seminars, is it? Something like that. So that is an important part of our work. You can find briefs and recordings on our website, www.eba.se. So, to today's program, we'll have four presentations, and you have seen that in the program. We have quite arbitrarily grouped them according to alphabetically, according to your first name, in case you wonder about the order. So first we'll have Arvid Erlandsson, who will say something about the when and why of helping individual and organizational decision-making from a psychological perspective. And then Elin Wimefjell will give us some glimpses from your dissertation, from your work in Kenya, called Essays on Child Education, Child Labor, and the Agricultural Economy. Then we have Montserrat López-Jerez, who has studied agricultural development in Vietnam, in North, respectively South Vietnam, two basins there. And you will present your brief called Path-Dependent Possibilities of Transformation, Agricultural Change and Economic Development in North and South Vietnam. And then finally, but not least, Yumiko Yasuda will present her brief, Former Rules, Informal Norms and Advocacy Strategies of NGOs, Lessons from the Mekong River, also very pertinent to SEO work. We are very happy to have two highly qualified commentators as well, Gunn Eriksson Skog, who is now senior policy specialist with focus on employment at CEDA, and Magnus Björk from Forum Syd. So you can see we'll now give the presenters an opportunity to present their briefs. They'll be given 15 minutes. Yes, I know it's very short, but hopefully any remaining questions will have to wait until later. And then Gun and Magnus will give their comments briefly, and then we'll engage in a roundtable discussion with all of us, and we'll also invite you in the audience to take part. So, without further ado, Arvid, I will also ask you to take your name here, name tags here. So, Arvid Erlandsson, please, the floor is yours.
Okay. Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for inviting me here. My name is Arvid Erlandsson. I'm currently a postdoctoral researcher at Linköping University at the group at the Jedi Lab group, which is it's very good now because a lot of people liked Star Wars, so it's very popular. And it's Jedi stands for judgment, emotion, decision, and intuition, and we conduct research on different kinds of economic decision making and the kind of decision-making I'm mostly interested in is about helping decisions. That is, decisions that involve not only the person making the decision, but also other people. We have a lot of exciting projects. I would be happy to speak about all of them, but because I have 15 minutes, I will focus on my dissertation thesis, which was written in Lund University, and I defended it about exactly a year ago. More or less. And it looked like this. I have to admit a little bit that I'm no expert in foreign aid. My background is in philosophy and especially experimental psychology. So the thesis is written in that framework. Also, this dissertation, some of our current projects are very applied, but the dissertation focuses much on the basic research. I know that the decision making that is ongoing, like it's very most relevant for CEDA and for most of you here, is probably on the organizational level. That is, it's not a single person making the decision, but the dissertation focus and most of experimental psychology is on the individual level, that is individual decision making. But there are some important differences, but also some similarities. So I think you can say something about organizational decision making by looking at individual decision making. And the key question of my dissertation thesis was to investigate which psychological factors or mechanisms that are making people scope insensitive in helping situations. And of course, now you a little bit wonder, what does scope insensitivity means? And to illustrate, let's go back to September last year. This is secondhand information I got from newspapers, but I think it holds that on September 1st, this fundraising organization, Radiohjälpen, launched a campaign for collecting private donors' money to for refugees, especially from Syria. And during the first day, they collected around 250,000 Swedish kronor. Second day, also 250,000 kronor. The third day, 4 million. And you can correct if I have the numbers wrong. This somehow, unless the severity of the problem increased, multiplied by 16 between September 2nd and September 3rd, this represents some kind of scope insensitivity, that the amount of help is not proportional to the amount of need. And of course, this is one very, very important force. This was published in the morning of September 3rd, and a little bit beginning from this area, we can ask two questions. First, the when question, that is, which aspects of this situation between second and third increased the amount of helping. The second question is the why question, that is more focused on the psychological mechanisms, that is, for example, feelings, thoughts, and beliefs. Which of those kind of mechanisms can best explain the increased motivation to help? And this was my dissertation very much started from the question about when and why of helping. And we start with the why question. That is, traditionally in the helping literature, you can see that the emphasis on emotions has been very high. So emotions has generally been the number one explanation for us helping. So most previous research has said that helping comes from the heart. Feeling more equals helping more. Feeling less equals helping less. And the reason actually I started this research was, or I chose this topic for my dissertation, was I didn't really believe that everything had to do with emotions. So, of course, emotion reactions are important, but my idea was it's not the only thing. There are other factors that can motivate you to help more. And after scanning the literature, we came up with two additional ones. So helping can come from the heart, or can come from the emotions, but it can also come from the perceived effectiveness. So people are more motivated to help when they believe they can make a great difference. They are less likely to help if they believe it will be merely a drop in the bucket. So we have two of those, and then the third one is the perceived responsibility mechanisms, which is not emotional, not so much calculating, but more related to the responsibility aspects. People are much more likely to help if they believe they are responsible for the situation, much less likely to help if they are if they believe someone else is responsible. So the assumption here is that all these three can motivate us to help, can influence helping. It can make us more motivated to help, and it can make us less motivated to help. Then the when question, that is more the situational aspects of helping. And generally we can illustrate this with, like here, people who, if you are, the identified victim effect refers to the tendency to be more motivated to help if you hear about an identified victim. In contrast to if you hear about statistical victims. Actually, this is my girlfriend when she was a child. I represent her as the identified victim here. And the identified victim, it can refer to determinedness. We are more motivated to help determined victims than merely undetermined victims. It will be someone in the future. It's also about the name and the picture and the amount of vividness in the description. And if you conduct an experiment, you let maybe 100 people read a charity appeal with an identified victim, and you let 100 other people read a charity appeal that is very similar but does not include an identified victim, and you measure the amount of helping or the amount of donations they give later. And in general, this effect holds, so identified victims are eliciting more donations than statistical victims. Although it's important to notice that this applies mostly when it's one identified victim. If you have 100 identified victims, it's the amount of helping is similar to 100 statistical victims. So it's a single identified victim that really makes this. And this can, of course, be applied to the picture of Ayla and Kurdi at the beach as well. It's a single identified victim. Another helping effect is the proportion dominance effect, which is it's not only about the victims one can help that matter, but also the victims one cannot help. So imagine the first project there where you can help 4 out of 6 children. I know this is like a little bit artificial, which is experimental psychology is sometimes a little bit artificial, but imagine you can help 4 out of 6. Then reading about another project where you can help 4 out of 20. So although the absolute number of victims you can save is the same in both the projects, the rescue proportion, the proportion of victims you can save, is higher in the top one and lower in the bottom one. And many studies have shown that this people prefer to help when you can make a big impact, even if the absolute number of victims is similar or even lower. And this will then also represent that it makes it might make people choose projects that are small scale, but where they can do a lot of proportional impact over large scale, where they can do a higher absolute impact, but proportionally less. The third effect is the in-group effect, which more or less is the tendency to be more motivated to help in-group victims than out-group victims. And of course, in-group can be, there are different kinds of in-group. For example, kin, you are more likely to help the one you are related to than the one you are not related to. You are more likely to help those you know personally than the strangers. And also on the more, national level. In general, people are more likely to help, Swedish potential donors are more likely to help Swedish victims in need than, for example, Danish or Canadian victims in need. And I have kept the countries similar on how developed they are. So all these free effects has been researched previously. But what was new in this, in my thesis, was that I wanted to investigate the underlying mechanisms of all these free effects. So we tested all the free helping effects as possible mediators of, or all free psychological mechanisms as mediators of all free helping effects. So each of the mechanisms were tested on each of the helping effects. And the results show that the reason we help, suggests that the reason we help identified victims more than statistical victims is because we feel more emotions toward identified victims. On the other hand, the reason we help a high rescue proportion project more than a low rescue proportion project is that it's not about emotions. That's about the perceived efficiency or the perceived utility of the project. And finally, the in-group effect is primarily driven not by emotional reactions and not by the perceived utility and efficiency, but by the perceived responsibility. We help Swedish victims more because we believe we have a higher responsibility to help them compared to non-Swedish victims. So this was the novel aspect of the thesis. Okay, and now we come to the relevance for, as you can see, my presentation so far has been, it's very much about individual decision making. It's about basic research. It's not extremely easy to see how foreign aid decision makers can apply this. But you could imagine, now I spoke to a couple of people who know this better than me, but within, for example, SIDA, you have to make allocations. Which kind of projects do you want to support? And you can imagine that you have one project that makes you extremely emotionally touched. That's project A, which makes you very emotionally touched. If you follow your heart, you will choose that. You have another project that doesn't make you so emotional, but it seems to be very efficient. It seems to be doing a lot of good. And then the third project, which it doesn't make you so emotional, and it seems efficient, but not the most efficient, but somehow you have created an expectation. You have maybe promised the person behind this that it will be funded. So there, in that situation, I know it's probably not as it works, but you could imagine at least that your heart pulls one direction, your calculating head pulls another direction, and your by the book, your rule book, draws a third direction. I'm not sure exactly how applicable this is, but and also I have to say that helping decisions made by politicians and by SIDA officials are much more grand scale than individual decision making. That means if I have to decide about giving to charity or not, that will not do a great difference in the whole world. However, helping decisions made by politicians or by SIDA officials, that's more grand scale. The consequences are much greater. So it's even more important to get those right than the individual decisions. And the grand scale helping decisions can be both about the magnitude of help. For example, if I understand correctly, we are earmarking 1% of national income to foreign aid. You could argue to lower that or increase that. So that's about the magnitude of help and about allocation of resources, like the one I was saying, that you have to choose between the different projects. And it's well established that individual decision making is influenced by heuristics and biases, resulting in suboptimal decisions. Of course, there are differences between individual and organization decision making, but it's at least some of the human tendencies in decision making will probably apply in organizational decision making as well. And I believe it would be very interesting for our group, for example, to involve a little bit more about the group aspect, the group decision making, not only the individual decision making. And finally, being aware of the common heuristics and biases is a good first step for reducing their influence on decisions. So this is an indirect influence of this kind of research, psychological research, that it can help decision makers to be a little bit more aware of the common heuristics and biases that occur, and that could be a first step in reducing the influence on decisions. And here are some books written by academics, some books written about academics, but still in a very accessible way. It's fun to read. So if you haven't read it before, I think it's a good idea. it's fun as well. Okay, I will skip these, but thank you.
Okay, thank you very much for this very thought-provoking presentation.